Hello and welcome to the Feck It Fun, Fabulous and Free Eating Disorder Recovery Podcast. I'm Helly and I'm here to provide regular bursts of information and inspiration, some neuroscience applicable to eating disorder recovery, perhaps a few rants, but otherwise lots of positivity with a bit of a feck it attitude, some fun and a sprinkling of fabulousness to help everyone find freedom in recovery. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Feck It Fun, Fabulous and Free Eating Disorder Recovery Podcast. I'm Helly, I'm your host, and I'm here talking about everything related to eating disorders and how to overcome them. You know, overcoming an eating disorder can be very, very hard. Yes, it can raise a lot of challenging emotions. Yes, it can be a process that feels like it's never going to end, and it can be tediously boring at times as well. But that doesn't mean that it always has to be boring. It doesn't mean that you can't find little pockets of enjoyment as you're going through the process. It can't mean that you can't find the opportunity for some real moments of exhilaration as you're going through the process. And it doesn't mean that you can't just be bloody fabulous as you're going through the process. So this is the Feck It Fun, Fabulous and Free Eating Disorder Recovery Podcast because I don't want you to think that eating disorder recovery has to be boring. So, having said that, let's talk about a topic that's absolutely fascinating, but, you know, it's probably a little bit theoretical and scientific, so maybe not the most fabulously fun and exhilarating topic, but hopefully a topic that you will find helpful as you're going through the process to bash this eating disorder out of your life and also help you understand what causes eating disorders and the fact that your brain is not broken because you developed an eating disorder. It's not something that has happened for no reason. And also help you understand that once upon a time, having an eating disorder was actually a bit of a superpower. It was a very necessary thing for the survival of not just the person with the eating disorder, but their family and their tribe as well. This episode then is about the evolutionary theory to eating disorders and the addiction model for eating disorders and how the two combine. So if you've been listening to any of my recent episodes, you'll know that I now understand restrictive eating disorders to be an addiction to energy deficit and that addiction, as I say, developed because through evolution it once had a survival purpose. So some of you will already be familiar with the evolutionary theory to restrictive eating disorders. Some of you will probably understand it in depth already. So, you know, hopefully this episode will add a bit more information to what you already know, but it might not. So I'm sorry if it doesn't. And if you want to skip on to the next episode when it comes out, then feel free. I won't be offended. But for any of you who don't understand the evolutionary theory to eating disorders already, or how it might link up to the understanding that eating disorders could be a form of addiction, then carry on listening and hopefully you'll understand a bit more by the end of the episode. So if we go back to our hunter-gatherer ancestors, for them a high reward response to restricting their food intake and constantly being on the go in order to avoid energy surplus would have better enabled them to migrate when food resources were in short supply in the environment that they were in at that particular time. And actually, many of what are considered mental illnesses today can actually be explained in evolutionary, survival-based and advantageous terms. But of course, in our modern world, where there aren't the same threats to our safety, and we have everything available at the touch of an app, these evolutionary brain changes can now be very unhelpful and problematic, and that's why we now consider them to be mental illnesses and things that, you know, obviously people don't want in their life. So this episode then, as I say, is going to explore the evolutionary theory of restrictive eating disorders, including how and why once upon a time the typical addictive drive to pursue energy deficit seen in people with restrictive eating disorders would have been beneficial. But first of all, let's just go back to think about an evolutionary explanation for addictions as a whole, because any addiction can develop when someone engages in a drug. And I put drug in inverted commas there because a drug can be a drug that you take, or it can be a behavior, or it can be something like the physiological state of energy deficit. So the addiction develops when someone engages in a drug that creates a high reward response through the brain's reward pathways with the release of dopamine and natural opiates. And that makes them feel incredible and highly motivated to repeat the experience for the same rewarding effects. And these brain-based reward systems evolved so that we do find pleasure in the things in life that are essential for the survival of not just ourselves as individuals, but also of our species. So things like food, shelter, sex, and safety are all things that would trigger the reward system, ensuring that we feel motivated to seek more of the same so that we are able to stay safe and procreate. Now, in our ancestors' times, when life was pretty basic compared to now, this survival-based reward system was really quite a good thing, ensuring they stayed alive long enough to procreate and eventually lead to the birth of each of us. But although times have moved on since our ancestors' day, and we now live in an age full of highly rewarding substances and activities available to us at the touch of a button, our brains haven't actually evolved to catch up with the world, the modern world we live in. So the reward systems we have in our brains that were built to find the motivation to pursue the good things in life are now finding pleasure in highly rewarding things that are so rewarding that our brains will then pursue more of them above and beyond other less rewarding things in life. And that's a key reason for why addictions today are much more prevalent than they've probably ever been. But if that's the case, why doesn't everyone develop an addiction? If we all have brains that have evolved to find rewards in these highly rewarding and freely available drugs that our modern world is absolutely littered with now, why doesn't everyone develop an addiction to all of it? After all, some people can have a drink socially, while others become addicted to alcohol. Some people can engage in video games here and there, and others develop a drive to keep playing video games to the point they lose their careers and they lose their relationships. And so the answer to why some people can just dabble in these what you know might be considered highly addictive substances or behaviours and other people become addicted is that every one of us has a brain that's wired to find pleasure in different pursuits. And through evolution, that different wiring and finding pleasure in different ways would have helped to ensure the survival of the whole tribe. It was beneficial at a tribal level if one member of the tribe found hunting to be the most rewarding thing ever, and another member of the tribe found that building shelter gave them a really high reward. So that way, all the things they needed for their basic living, for their basic way of life, was being met by people who found reward in all these different things that they needed. And so today our brains are still wired to find pleasure in different ways. And of course there are additional factors that make some people more susceptible to developing addictions than others, and those will include things like sociocultural factors, availability of the drug and ease of access to it. It might include stress or trauma history, as well as factors like somebody's age when they first engage with the drug itself. So when you understand then that our brains evolved to find pleasure and reward in finding food and eating for the sake of our survival, it makes restrictive eating disorders where a person develops a high reward response to the state of energy deficit seem on the surface even more illogical. Because a normal brain finds pleasure in food, which, you know, food then triggers their dopamine release and motivates a person to continue eating because food is essential for survival. And most people who attempt diets will find that at some point their brain and body take over and drive them to eat so that they stay sufficiently nourished. What then has happened in the brain of someone with an eating disorder in which there's the opposite response? And was there a time in evolution that these seemingly deliberate self-starvation behaviours were ever actually helpful? So, as I said, some of you will already be familiar with what's called the flee from famine evolutionary theory of eating disorders, which explains why some brains have evolved to pursue food restriction and high levels of movement when it perceives food scarcity in the immediate environment. So the flee from famine theory hypothesizes that the typical symptoms of a restrictive eating disorder, particularly restricted food intake, excessive movement, and denial of there being a problem, evolved because it enabled our ancestors, who were the nomadic foragers, to leave depleted environments and move to find a new foraging ground that was dense with lots of delicious foods that they could then rest there and eat. So a normal physiological response to low food intake is to preserve energy by reducing urges to move and increasing hunger. But that type of response isn't beneficial to someone if they need to migrate and find food somewhere else. So they need to be able to move away from the area they're in to find food somewhere else, or else they're not going to survive. And in that situation, it's beneficial for a starving forager to be able to stop foraging and eating the depleted resources locally where they are at the moment, and to feel restless and energetic so they can move to find food. And as well as that, there's an additional benefit to them not being able to recognize how dangerously malnourished they are. Because if they can recognize how malnourished they are, then that might just put them into too much of an anxiety response and make them too scared to leave the environment they're in. So it's helpful for the person themselves not to be able to identify that state of malnutrition that they're currently in. So the flee from famine theory highlights three key adaptations to someone with a restrictive eating disorder. And those are the ability to ignore food immediately available, hyperactivity, and denial of starvation symptoms with distorted body image. And it would naturally have been essential for survival if these compulsions to move and find food while avoiding intake in the here and now were more urgent than any other human needs a person has. But not every member of the tribe would have needed this adaptive response to a famine situation. Those who did have this adaptive response were the minority in their groups, but they were the individuals who would have had the drive and the stamina to migrate even though they were malnourished. They would have had a powerful aversion to any behaviours that could lead to energy surplus, because that would have switched off the migratory response and not been helpful for survival. And at the end of the day, it was these individuals and their optimism and energy who inspired the others in the tribe who were feeling the effects of energy deprivation, encouraging them to continue migrating so the whole family, the whole tribe, could reach a new hunting and gathering ground together. Today then, some of us still carry the genetic blueprint for this adaptation response to famine, and so we can then trigger our brain into these behaviours if we lose too much weight and enter a state of sufficient energy deficit. So what was once a means to survival for our ancestors can be an invisible, life-limiting prison to those affected today. And just to say as well, the need to inspire others in the tribe that somebody who had the genetics for the what we consider today to be an eating disorder back in our ancestors' day is another characteristic that also links to a key feature that many with restrictive eating disorders experience, and that's what's termed the martyr complex. So martyr complex is important to be aware of with restrictive eating disorders, and it's something that I've covered in depth in the book Addicted to Energy Deficit. So if you want to understand more about it, then please have a read of that. I will try and make another episode about it in future, alongside all the other episodes that I still want to put out. But just to say, once upon a time, having that martyr complex that, you know, is still so prevalent in people with eating disorders now, it was once quite a necessary thing. A question then that you might now have is, what then happened to our ancestors who were lucky or unlucky enough, depending on how you view it, to have this predisposition to this flee from famine response? How did they start eating again when they did migrate and find food, if they had such a strong aversion to eating in the same way people with eating disorders do? Well, for our ancestors, the migratory response and ability to motivate the tribe to follow would have been switched on just until an abundant environment was found again. And once they were back in an environment where they had lots of yummy foods available to eat again, it's thought that the social pressure and support from family would have encouraged them to start eating. And then that, of course, in turn, reversed their energy deficit state, switching off the migratory response. And because for them, the migratory behaviours had been short-lived, there was minimal risk of our ancestors developing deeply entrenched brain circuitry that was then highly resistant to change. And instead, support to eat again would have reactivated the circuits in their brain, driving normal eating, causing the migratory response to ultimately subside. So if we're to link all this then to the addiction model for restrictive eating disorders, for those with the genetic blueprint to flee from famine, or as we know it today, to develop a restrictive eating disorder, the brain is primed to make key changes if they enter a state of energy deficit. So when body fat and lean tissue stores fall below a certain point, and that point is going to be different for everybody depending on their set point, the brain will switch on the adaptive migratory famine response. And that famine response involves a high reward response to food avoidance behaviours, a high reward response to movement and exercise, and to other behaviours that sustain energy deficit. And the brain will also promote and reward thoughts that prevent the person from recognising their hunger or how malnourished they are and stimulate an avoidant response to weight gain. And the brain achieves this with the same processes as other forms of addiction, through the release of natural opiates and dopamine to reward and drive the necessary behaviours. And of course, in someone with an eating disorder today, these behaviours last much longer than they would have done in our ancestors' time, possibly years, possibly decades. This creates deeply wired in brain circuitry that then causes these behaviours to become embedded habits and to the significant dopamine deficit people also then develop. In addition, the numbing effects of the addictive nature of the eating disorder become a strong maintaining factor for it, making it even more painful and difficult to stop. And all of that combined leads to the entrenched addiction to energy deficit that people with eating disorders experience today. And the other factor that makes overcoming this evolutionary phenomenon more complicated today relates to the beliefs that underlie the behaviours. Our ancestors would have understood why they needed to keep moving without stopping to eat in the scarce environment they were in. The compulsion to migrate and lead others to do the same made sense to them and their tribe. They were in a very scarce environment. Their whole survival was at stake. It made sense that they needed to move and they needed someone to lead them in doing that. And when they found a dense foraging ground, stopping to eat again would have been logical and hence easier for them to pursue. Today, though, people believe that they are engaging in compelling energy deficit creating behaviours because they have a fear of weight gain or they want to fit a societal norm. Perhaps they fear being unhealthy or becoming obese due to public health messages that often do more harm than good. So in people with eating disorders today, not only have their behaviours lasted longer and become more embedded than in our ancestors' time, but they're also maintained by powerful, ongoing and very damaging beliefs. At the end of the day, understanding the evolutionary theories to addictions and eating disorders can help you make sense of behaviours or illnesses that in today's world seem inexplicable, adding to the self-perception that too many people have of being a bit crazy. You're not a bit crazy. At one time, these brain changes served a real purpose for survival. Today, though, unfortunately, they form addictions and they ruin lives. To me, the evolutionary theory of eating disorders makes so much sense and takes the concept of mental illness, in inverted commas, or a diseased brain, also in inverted commas, to what is actually a very clever brain, believing it's fighting for survival. It's just that our baseline brain doesn't understand that in the modern world we live in, these adaptations are actually now more damaging and leading us away from survival, not towards it. But perhaps your understanding of this evolutionary theory and why your brain developed this addiction to the pursuit of energy deficit can simultaneously give you better reasoning for why it makes sense to eat large amounts of food so that your brain can trust that it's now in an environment that is a dense foraging ground and start to switch off the migratory response. And at the end of the day, until you really get out of energy deficit, until your brain recognizes that you have sufficient fat and lean tissue stores for your set point weight and you are fully physiologically out of energy deficit, your brain is not going to switch off the migratory response completely, and so you won't recover. So that's why you need to keep aiming for overshoot. That's why you need to keep eating. Allow your body to do what it needs to do to gain weight, to recover, to heal, and to give you your life back and your freedom back. Because you want a free life. You don't want to keep living like this. I know you don't. I hope that's been a helpful episode for you. I hope that's helped you understand a little bit more about why eating disorders don't necessarily mean that you are super crazy. They just mean that once upon a time, you would have been the leader of the pack in helping your people survive. And that's quite a good thing, I think. Anyway, I'm Helly. This is the Feck It Fun, Fabulous and Free Eating Disorder Recovery Podcast. Please go and be fecking fabulous and go and fecking jump out that plane and eat a lot of food for today, please. Have a good day. You'll find me on hellybarnes.com. If you have any specific questions about anything you want me to talk about on this podcast series, then please contact me through my website and just ask your questions, and I will try and respond in future episodes to them. So I will speak to you very soon. Otherwise, have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Feck It Fun, Fabulous and Free Eating Disorder Recovery Podcast. Don't forget, eating disorder recovery doesn't have to be boring and doesn't have to be serious. Now go and grab yourself some food and have a fabulous rest of the day.